Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Democracy Now! Is committed to bringing you the stories and perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. From the peace activists demanding an end to war, to indigenous leaders fighting to stop fossil fuel extraction and save the planet. Our independent reporting is only possible because we're funded by you, not by the weapons manufacturers when we cover war or gun violence, not by the oil, gas, coal, or nuclear companies when we cover the climate crisis. We count on your generous support to keep Democracy Now! Going. Please make your donation of $5, $10, or more at democracynow.org. Every dollar counts. Thank you so much. We're counting on you. Stay safe. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What the Supreme Court did today was to eviscerate the authority of the EPA to protect our planet, to deal with the four-alarm fire that is affecting every single part of the world that we live in.
In another 6-3 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court sharply limited the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate carbon emissions from power plants. It's a victory for big polluters, but a potential disaster for the planet. We'll speak to former EPA official Mustafa Ali as Ketanji Brown Jackson is sworn in as the Supreme Court's first Black female justice. The Supreme Court also ruled President Biden can end the Trump era, Remain in Mexico program. We'll go to San Antonio, where 53 people seeking refuge in the United States died earlier this week after being confined to a sweltering tractor trailer in Texas, the deadliest human trafficking tragedy in U.S. history.
Any death that has to do with migrants is preventable. And in this case, it is both the attacks from our governor in Texas and the complicity and enabling of the Biden administration.
Plus, we speak to the Dutch physician, Dr. Rebecca Gompertz, who's dedicated her life to helping expand access to abortion from providing them on ships in international waters to sending abortion pills around the world. We'll look at the growing fight in the United States over medical abortion.
I think this is not the moment anymore to stay within the law. This is the moment to make sure that women have access to safe abortions, despite the law, and despite the fact that this, because this is such an unjust law that is creating so much social inequality and that will affect really the most poor women in the country.
This is over 180 people are arrested in Washington, D.C., protesting the Supreme Court overturning Roe. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court's voted to sharply limit the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate carbon emissions from power plants. The court's 6-3 ruling in the case of West Virginia versus EPA is seen as a major victory for the fossil fuel industry and a result of a decades-long attempt to limit the regulation of corporations. Liberal Justice Elena Kagan slammed the decision, writing for the dissent, quote, "The court appoints itself instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening," unquote. Joining the majority opinion was Trump appointee Justice Amy Coney Barrett, whose father helped lead the American Petroleum Institute for two decades. We'll have more on the Supreme Court and the climate crisis after headlines. Environmental groups have filed a pair of lawsuits seeking to block the Biden administration from restarting lease sales for oil and gas wells on public lands. Together, the lawsuits seek to protect more than 140,000 acres in several western states. In April, President Biden called on the U.S. to expand fossil fuel drilling to offset a spike in fuel costs linked to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Public Citizen President Robert Weissman said in response, quote, "Selling off more public lands for drilling might help big oil, but it won't lower gas prices and it will worsen climate chaos." In Lisbon, Portugal, hundreds of protesters marched Thursday outside the UN Ocean Conference demanding meaningful action to halt pollution, protect marine life, and slow the warming of the Earth's seas. The conference brought together some 7,000 scientists, activists, and heads of state. Greenpeace Oceans Policy Advisor Laura Meller spoke at a protest outside the talks.
While activists are trying to peacefully protest outside the conference venue, the real looters, the ocean destroyers, are out there depleting the oceans as we speak.
Back in the United States, the Supreme Court announced Thursday it will hear oral arguments this October in Moore v. Harper, a case involving gerrymandered congressional maps that were struck down by North Carolina's highest court. A Supreme Court ruling in favor of North Carolina Republicans could strip state courts of their power to strike down state laws while expanding the power of GOP-controlled state legislatures to control federal elections. The court agreed to hear Moore v. Harper one day after it ruled 6-3 to reinstate a Republican-drawn congressional map struck down by a lower court as a racially motivated violation of the Voting Rights Act. New York Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted in response, quote, "We are witnessing a judicial coup in process. If the president and Congress do not restrain the court now, the court is signaling they will come for the presidential election next," AOC said. The Supreme Court ruled 5-4 Thursday that the Biden administration may end the Trump-era Remain in Mexico program, formerly known as the Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in the majority opinion a lower court had overreached when it found the policy should remain in place after President Biden ordered it rescinded last year. Since the program's implementation in 2019, some 70,000 asylum seekers were forced to wait in Mexico while their cases were resolved in U.S. courts. Thousands enrolled in MPP reported being kidnapped, raped, tortured, and facing homelessness while they waited in Mexico. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In San Antonio, Texas, the alleged driver of the truck where dozens of asylum seekers died after they were trapped in scorching heat made his first appearance in court on Thursday. Omero Zamorano faces human smuggling charges resulting in the death of 53 people. Three others have also been arrested in connection with the tragedy. Meanwhile, immigrant justice advocates in the Texas border city of El Paso held a vigil Thursday honoring the San Antonio victims and the thousands of other asylum seekers who've lost their lives trying to reach the United States for refuge.
Our only crime is to have needs. We don't come to steal or to commit crimes, but rather to work, to help our families. Each one of these crossings does not represent just one person. There are families, children, and siblings behind all of this, behind each person who just died.
We'll have more on the deadliest human trafficking incident in U.S. history in San Antonio after headlines. French authorities have arrested at least 10 suspected smugglers in connection with the drownings of 27 asylum seekers near Calais, France, as they attempted to cross the English Channel. The tragedy happened last November. One of the victims was 7 years old. Back at the Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson was sworn in Thursday as the 116th justice and the first black woman to hold the position in the court's 233-year history. At a noon ceremony, Chief Justice John Roberts administered Jackson a constitutional oath. She then took a judicial oath administered by retiring Justice Stephen Breyer, whom Jackson clerked for after she graduated from Harvard Law School in 1996. Outside the Supreme Court, police arrested more than 180 reproductive rights protesters Thursday as they peacefully blocked an intersection in a massive show of nonviolent civil disobedience. The protest took place just 6 days after the court's conservative majority voted 6-3 to strike down Roe v. Wade. Among those arrested was Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, Planned Parenthood CEO Alexis McGill Johnson, and Democratic U.S. Congressmember Judy Chu of California. Melanie DiRigo, a progressive Democrat running for Congress in Long Island, New York, said after her arrest, quote, "I was let go after a couple of hours. But for millions of people in states where abortion, a critical health procedure, is now criminalized, their arrests will be far longer and far more severe," she said. A court in Kentucky has temporarily blocked the state's so-called trigger law abortion ban from taking effect. Lawyers for Kentucky's only two abortion providers are reviewing Thursday's ruling to determine when the Louisville clinics can restart abortion care. In Florida, a judge also has temporarily blocked a state law banning abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Lawmakers in Florida's Republican-led state legislature are reportedly planning to introduce even more restrictive anti-abortion bills in the coming weeks. On Thursday, President Biden called on Senate Democrats to agree to a carve-out filibuster exception to order in order to pass new reproductive rights legislation.
I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law, and the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that. And if the filibuster gets in the way, it's like voting rights, it should be, we provide an exception for this, require an exception to the filibuster for this action.
Biden was speaking from the NATO summit in Madrid. In response, the offices of Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona said they will not agree to a carve-out to the filibuster to codify abortion rights. Ukrainian officials say a Russian missile slammed into a high-rise apartment building in a recreational center in the Black Sea port city of Odessa overnight, killing at least 19 people and wounding dozens of others. In Russia, WNBA star Brittany Griner appeared today before a court outside Moscow, where she faces up to 10 years in prison. Brittany Griner was detained on February 17th after she was picked up at a Russian airport on allegations of carrying cannabis oil vape cartridges. Her supporters say Russia is using her as a political pawn. The New York Times reports the Kremlin appears interested in a possible prisoner exchange involving Griner and Victor Boot, an infamous arms trafficker known as the Merchant of Death, who was sentenced to 25 years in a U.S. prison in 2012 for conspiracy to commit terrorism. In Sudan, government forces shot and killed at least eight people Thursday as huge crowds of protesters defied a communications blackout and took to the streets to demand the ouster of a military junta that seized power 8 months ago. And in Ecuador, indigenous leaders have reached a deal with the government ending nearly 3 weeks of massive protests due to rising food and fuel prices. The deal includes a decrease in fuel costs, sets limits on oil exploration on indigenous land, and prohibits mining on protected areas, national parks, and water sources. The government has been given 90 days to act. Indigenous leaders have vowed to push the government to fulfill all demands. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In another 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court has sharply limited the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate carbon emissions from power plants. President Biden decried the ruling as a, quote, another devastating decision that aims to take our country backwards, unquote. The court's ruling in the case of West Virginia versus EPA is seen as a major victory for the fossil fuel industry and a result of a decades-long attempt to limit the regulation of corporations. In his majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts writes, capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that'll force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day. But it is not plausible that Congress gave EPA the authority to adopt on its own such a regulatory scheme, Roberts said. Liberal Justice Elena Kagan slammed the decision, writing in the dissent, whatever else this court may know about, it does not have a clue about how to address climate change. And let's say the obvious. The stakes here are high. Yet the court today prevents congressionally authorized agency action to curb power plants' carbon dioxide emissions. Justice Kagan went on to write, the court appoints itself, instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening, Kagan wrote. On Capitol Hill, New York Congress member Jamal Bowman warned the court's ruling will have deadly effects.
Cleaning up the grid is the only way to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector. So let's be very clear. This is yet another vicious power grab. And if we let them get away with it, people will die. Because of the reasoning used by the justices, this ruling could potentially undermine all kinds of regulations that are about saving lives and promoting well-being. We cannot, we must not, and we will not let this court stop us. The Biden administration must declare a climate emergency immediately and use every single power at its disposal.
That's Congressmember Jamal Bowman. We're joined now by Mustafa Ali. He is the former head of the Environmental Justice Program at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Mustafa is the executive vice president of the National Wildlife Federation, also the CEO and founder of Revitalization Strategies. Mustafa, welcome back to Democracy Now! First, respond to the court's ruling.
You know, this radical court, the decision that they came down with, is deeply disappointing. It is also destabilizing, and it is deadly. My grandmother says that when you know better, do better. The court knew better. It just decided not to do better. And because of that, they put people's lives in danger, and they have also put in place steps that will accelerate the climate crisis. We have to, you know, continue to engage with frontline communities to make sure that they are going to have the resources they need to be able to navigate this decision as their lives have literally been put in the crosshairs.
Tell us what the original case, the West Virginia versus EPA, is. How did this all begin?
Well, it began because of the Clean Power Plan. And of course, we need to go back to the Clean Air Act and just share with everyone, you know, that Congress stated at that time that the Environmental Protection Agency had a right and responsibility to make sure that they were addressing the air pollution and protecting public health and the environment. Fast forward to the Clean Power Plan, which was actually put in place to be able to minimize the impacts that were happening from carbon pollution, to put in place the rules that are necessary to make sure that we have a safety net across our country and to be able to lower the carbon emissions. So the case that they brought forward is a number of states who did not want EPA to be able to have the ability to do that. And as was stated earlier, was driven by the fossil fuel producing states and those industries were the main drivers.
So the ruling comes at a time when climate scientists are urging rich nations to significantly cut down greenhouse gas emissions and divest from fossil fuels. Of course, this not only impacts the United States, this decision will reverberate around the world. Talk about how it will impact the U.S.'s plan to cut carbon emissions by, 50% by the end of the decade, something that President Biden referenced when he talked about this decision being devastating.
It makes it so much more difficult to be able to achieve the goals that the IPCC and the National Climate Assessment has shared with us. You know, domestically in our country, just to actually anchor folks in some facts, we've got between 200,000 and 300,000 people who die prematurely from air pollution. And a part of it also comes from coal-fired power plants. So we know that not only were we trying to make sure that we're lowering the emissions that are coming out of there, the carbon emissions, but you also have sulfuric dioxides, and you have nitrogen oxides and mercury and particulate matter. So when we know that we've also, those things exacerbate asthma, 24 million folks in our country, 7 million kids currently have asthma. So all of this makes it more difficult both to deal with the initial impacts of our most vulnerable communities and also to lower the emissions that are warming up our planet and our oceans. On a global scale, it also puts us in a very precarious situation because folks look to us for guidance and leadership. We know that we have COP coming up at the end of this year. And once again, when we enter into and we begin to the development of these international treaties, folks are looking at our country to see that if we're living up to the words that we're sharing with the rest of the planet. So we have to begin to move forward in a much more serious way on climate action.
And of course, you're talking about the COP, the Conference of Parties, the UN climate summit that will be taking place in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. I want to turn to Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey responding to the Supreme Court's ruling.
Became every polluter's ally. And by undermining the fundamental authority which the EPA has to regulate greenhouse gases, it has harmed every person in our country, but it has also undermined America's ability to be a leader internationally. We are going to have a difficulty in telling the rest of the world what to do when our own Supreme Court is tying the hands of the EPA behind its back. Okay, it is an absolute tragedy. The only answer, ultimately, is to repeal the filibuster, to expand the Supreme Court, to reclaim the two Supreme Court seats that were stolen by Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell between 2016 and 2020.
So that's Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey. Your response to what he says, and then specifically as you talk about asthma, you are the environmental justice head of it, the environmental justice program at the EPA, which goes to the issue of the disproportionately impacted communities of color in this country. But you look more globally at the world and who is most affected when the U.S. is historically the largest polluter in the world.
Well, Senator Markey was exactly right. You know, leadership matters. And we saw in the past administration that there was no leadership. In this administration, President Biden has put forth a number of different initiatives where he's trying to not only get his arms around the climate crisis, but also create opportunities for us to create new jobs and to make sure that we are strengthening communities. When we look in a global context on these sets of impacts that are happening, when we look at the wildfires and the hurricanes and the floods that are not only happening in our country and these extreme heat events, we understand that they disproportionately impact communities of color and lower wealth communities, both in our country and across the planet. We know that Black folks die at twice the rate when we're dealing with extreme heat. And we also know because of the lack of investments for decades that when we look at the floods that are happening, it is our most vulnerable communities who continue to get hit first and worst from the floods, from the hurricanes, and a number of other events that are tied to the climate crisis. So in this moment, we have the opportunity to not only show leadership, to make sure that $550 billion that the Senate has the opportunity to move forward on that will help us to address the climate crisis, to rebuild communities, and to make sure that we are protecting the lives of everyone in our country. But there will also be ripple effects across the planet, because as we make advances in this country, others will be able to take advantage of those. We have a responsibility in this moment to not only to act, but to show real leadership and to show humanity in this moment.
So the question is how that happens now with the Supreme Court decision. Also, 14 states have sued the Biden administration to end a pause on new oil and gas leasing on federal lands. Can you put this in the context of the Supreme Court decision?
Well, you know, when the Supreme Court sent this decision down, you know, it has actually motivated those who have not been supporters. And let's be very clear, the majority of the reason that folks are not being supportive in those states is because they're placing profit over people. So we have to raise our voices in this moment. We should be engaging with both our senators and our folks on the House side of the equation. We should be also engaging with folks in the State House to make sure that they know what our expectations are, that we want them to make sure that they are protecting our children and protecting our future and protecting our most vulnerable communities. And then we also have to make sure that folks are also dedicating the resources that other less developed countries will need to also be able to navigate this. All of this is literally at our fingertips. The resources exist, and the resources are there on Capitol Hill to be able to help the president and others to be able to move forward and to address these cases that are coming up through the various states.
We want to thank you for being with us, Mustafa Ali, former head of the Environmental Justice Program at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Mustafa is the Executive Vice President of National Wildlife Federation and head of Revitalization Strategies. And just to be clear, environmental groups have filed a pair of lawsuits seeking to block the Biden administration from restarting lease sales for oil and gas wells on public lands. Coming up, the Supreme Court's ruled President Biden can end the Trump-era Remain in Mexico program. We'll go to San Antonio, where 53 people seeking refuge died earlier this week in the deadliest human trafficking incident in U.S. history. Stay with us.
Porque así lo dijo el juez. Sistema pálido que te trata tal como te ves, pero no saben que de este lado la lupeta, amuleto de los santos, nos protegen de lo malo, aunque nos cuestione el humano. Seguimos siendo quien produce, sin nosotros nada fluye. El mundo es de quien lo construye, de la historia no se huye.
Barrio y Diáspora by Mexican rap artist Autry Funk. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court sided with the Biden administration on Thursday, saying the president has the power to end the Trump-era Remain in Mexico program, formerly known as MPP, or Migrant Protection Protocols. The ruling was 5-4, with Chief Justice Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh joining the court's three liberal justices in the majority. In his majority opinion, Roberts wrote a lower court had overreached when it blocked Biden from rescinding the program last year. Since the policy's implementation in 2019, almost 70,000 asylum seekers were forced to wait in Mexico while their cases were resolved in U.S. courts, a process that could take months or years. Thousands enrolled in MPP reported being kidnapped, raped, tortured, or left without shelter while they waited in Mexico. The ruling comes just days after 53 people seeking refuge in the United States died after being confined in a sweltering tractor trailer in San Antonio, Texas. Four people have been arrested in connection with the tragedy, including the alleged driver of the truck. We go now to San Antonio, where we're joined by Claudia Munoz, co-executive director of Grassroots Leadership, an organization dedicated to ending mass incarceration, deportation, criminalization, and prison profiteering. She recently wrote an op-ed for Truthout headlined, U.S. immigration policy is to blame for the horrific mass death in San Antonio. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. If you could start, Claudia, by talking about the Supreme Court decision, and then how it relates to the horror that has been exposed in San Antonio, where you are.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today. I think in terms of the MPP decision, it's certainly a welcome decision for us. We know it's not done. It has to go back to the Fifth Circuit, the lower court that initially made that decision. And then we still have other programs. Such as Title 42 that have a similar impact on migration and people's lives, right? And I think for us, what we are seeing is that all of these policies, at the end of the day, force people into violent and deadly pathways of migration, because as long as we have these policies that are really based on control and exclusion, people will not go to the bridge knowing they will be turned away. And so with both, you know, Title 42 still existing, it's great that MPP, you know, seemingly will be done away with soon, but Title 42 was just funded for another 6 months by Congress.
And again, Title 42 is the Trump pandemic policy of just citing the pandemic as a reason to keep people out of the United States.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so, again, as long as this, you know, exclusionary policies exist, people will find other ways to migrate that are much more violent and deadly, such as what happened in San Antonio on Monday.
I wanted to go to a clip of an LGBTQ plus asylum seeker from Honduras who was placed in the Remain in Mexico program. They were forced to wait in the border city of Matamoros for 2.5 years. This is what they said.
I slept by the river under some tents. I saw how narcos or murderers, people of that sort, they were just called La Maña. They would go and find women to rape them, children. I saw people dying. When you don't pay a kidnapper or you don't pay a so-called rent, what happens is they pour acid on you. So if I'm escaping from a country where I will be killed, and then they sent me to another country where I will also be killed for any reason, they are not helping us.
That's video from Families Belong Together, Gloria from Honduras, Claudia Munoz. Okay, so the court says you can end MPP, but how will the Biden administration do it?
Well, we're not sure. I think we're still waiting to see the exact way, right? We know that the decision has to go back to the lower court, and then another decision has to be made. And so I think, you know, for us, seeing all of the death around us, we are asking that some bold action is taken so that we can prevent more deaths from happening, which I will say every single migration-related death is preventable by policy that actually focuses on welcome and care. So we're hoping that whatever is decided by the administration is actually based on those values and not on exclusion and control.
So let's talk about how U.S. policy relates to the horror of human smuggling that we have seen unfold outside of San Antonio, with at this point 53 migrants dead in the back of a sweltering tractor-trailer truck. We believe at least 4 children and about 12 others are in hospital. The horror we've heard reports of, it's all just, you know, sort of leaking out right now. That steak seasoning was put over the people to disguise the smell. I want to turn to Karen Caballero, the mother of 23-year-old Alejandro Andino and 18-year-old Fernando Redondo Caballero, two Honduran asylum seekers who were among the dead in the San Antonio tragedy.
If it was as in other countries where we could ask for a law or an organization to fight for the youth's future, is that possible? No, it isn't. We're not in a country that is open to these kinds of things. But if I had to demand something, please, Honduras government, fight for this country's youth.
Karen Caballero's daughter-in-law, Margie Tamara, was also among the victims. Talk about what you understand took place and how this relates to U.S. policy, Claudia.
So we know that this is not a tragedy that just happened. This was done to these human beings by really the borders and those in power who uphold them and fund them every single year. And so what we have seen is absolutely devastating. We know it's preventable. Again, we know that as long as people are being turned away from the bridge, they will find other paths. Particularly in Texas, migration has been extremely violent, has been made to be extremely violent by state policy and really by the complicity and enabling of the Biden administration in stopping all of these states that are taking immigration into their own hands. You know, with the idea that the parents-based policies will keep people away. We know that's not going to happen, particularly as conditions, as this mother is mentioning, global conditions are worsening for people. And so as long as we have all of these state, local, and federal policies in place, people will continue to die, which we call preventable deaths. This should not be happening. What's happening again in Texas and other places is absolutely devastating. And these people, all of them should be here. There are groups that are asking that visas for trafficking, for victims of crime, are provided to the families, to the survivors, and that protection from deportation and relief is provided to the families of those whose lives were taken as well.
Can you talk about the anti-immigrant Texas policies such as Operation Lone Star that are also contributing to asylum seekers dying? I mean, it's amazing. Operation Lone Star, the full militarization of the southern U.S. border. They were part of the group in Uvalde, right, who did not move in to save the 19 children, fourth graders and their two parents, even as they stood in the hallway. Yet Operation Lone Star, the militarization is massive there. Explain what it means for migrants.
Absolutely. So in March of last year, Governor Abbott and a group of 25 other governors around the country organized themselves, what they called an effort to actually secure the southern border. And this operation, it's a $4 billion operation, which effectively deploys even more law enforcement and National Guard members, not just from Texas, but from other states as well. What they are using is that they are using an emergency order to create an enhanced trespassing charge. Up to date, they have charged over 3,000 people, and some of them have been in a state prison that was cleared out to detain these migrants for up to a year. It is, I mean, there's so many constitutional violations in terms of conditions, access to counsel, bail. I can even, you know, begin to fully cover it, but you know, what's happening is that the federal government has completely let Texas get away with this, which has emboldened.
Claudia, before we go, I want to quickly ask you about the efforts that are being made right now. Immigrant rights activists demanding to protect the survivors of this human smuggling tragedy from deportation. Do you know how they will be protected, if they will be granted, allowed to be in this country?
Yes. So what we know is that DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, took over the investigation, which, of course, you know, raises red flags for what will happen to the survivors and to the families of those whose lives were taken away. I know that groups like San Antonio Stands are asking both the federal government and local governments to certify U visas, trafficking visas, and also, you know, promise and ensure that people are not deported who are both collaborating with the investigation, but also the families of those whose lives were taken away. And so all efforts are being made to protect those lives, as well as efforts to prevent this from happening ever again.
Claudia, I want to thank you for being with us, co-executive director of Grassroots Leadership. We'll link to your piece in Truth That U.S. Immigration Policy is to Blame for the Horrific Mass Death in San Antonio. Coming up, we speak to a Dutch doctor who's been providing medication abortions around the world and increasingly right here in the United States. Back in 20 seconds. Won't Forget by Krungbin. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Protests continuing around the country over the Supreme Court's overturning Roe. On Thursday, police arrested more than 180 protesters outside the Supreme Court as they peacefully blocked an intersection in a massive show of nonviolent civil disobedience. We end today's show looking at how demand for abortion pills is surging in the United States following the ruling. But access to medication abortion is coming under attack by anti-abortion politicians. Earlier this week, I spoke with Dr. Dr. Rebecca Gompertz, a Dutch doctor who for years has defied abortion bans and restrictions around the world, prescribing abortion pills from overseas through her Europe-based groups, Women on Web and Aid Access. She's also the founder of Women on Waves, which sets sail around the world to provide safe abortion services in international waters off the coasts of countries where abortion is illegal, and delivered abortion pills across borders using drones or robots. I asked Dr. Gompertz to explain what medication abortion is.
So a medication abortion is a treatment which uses two types of medicine. One is called mifepristone and the other is called misoprostol, that is basically inducing a miscarriage. The mifepristone is blocking the hormone that is necessary to keep the pregnancy intact. And then 24 hours later, this medicine doesn't have very much side effects. Nothing much happens. Women don't really notice. But 24 hours later, they get four of the other tablets of misoprostol. And this tablet is causing the contractions of the womb so that the pregnancy is being expelled. The process is very similar to a miscarriage. It's extremely safe. It's safer than many over-the-counter painkillers that are available over-the-counter, and for sure safer than Viagra.
And now if we can go back and you can talk about your response to the Supreme Court decision making, gutting Roe v. Wade after a half a century.
So, I already initiated Aid Access, which is an Austrian organization, in order to reply to the response of women in need in the United States. We found through Women on Web that there were already many women in the U.S. that had real problems to access abortion services locally because the clinics charge too much. They charge. And many people are living in poverty and they could not afford the fees that were asked by the clinics. But also to travel to large distances. We published a lot of research about this together with Abigail Aiken from Texas University. Actually, when we started, we did not really foresee that this would happen. But since the Supreme Court, the draft of the ruling leaked in May, we saw an incredible surge in requests from all over the United States. I now work with 9 U.S. providers that are providing prescriptions for the states where they are licensed. There's 19 states where they're working in, which is filled by a pharmacy from the United States, and I do the other states where I provide the prescription, and then the medicines are mailed from India. So we can serve, Aid Access can serve all the states in the United States.
And how much do the drugs cost?
So there is a sliding scale. So for the services that I prescribe, we are asking around 95 euros, which is about $100. And the other providers, because the medicines are a bit more expensive in the United States, are asking $150. But women that cannot afford that amount, there's a sliding scale. So everybody will be helped.
So you have people like the South Dakota Governor Noem saying that she's going to try to stop these pills. Now, the Health and Human Services Secretary, Javier Becerra, and Merrick Garland have made the point, the Attorney General, that the FDA has approved these drugs. So how could your mailing of these pills be stopped and telemedicine appointments overall?
So, I mean, I think it's impossible to stop it. What I think is happening now, what a lot of the states are doing, the Republican states or where abortion is being banned, that it's a bullying tactic to scare people off. The United States is also known for its judicial injustice, where many people, once you're being prosecuted or an attempt is being made, that it's really hard to fight back. So I think it will scare off many people, this kind of language. Aid Access cannot be stopped. I'm not based in the United States, and I am practicing according to Austrian law and Austrian medical ethical guidelines and my own conscience. The other doctors that I work with, they are not working in South Dakota, so they wouldn't be, it doesn't affect them. I think what is the problem with these, with what is being stated, is that these regulations, they can be applied to people within the states where these bans are being imposed. But with the other Supreme Court decisions, which are actually also at some, might even reduce the authority of some of the federal agents, we don't know where it's going to head.
It might surprise many in the United States to learn that already more than half the abortions in the United States are these medication abortions. Can you talk about side effects or what people should be concerned about?
Yes. So I think it's important to understand that this was also the consequence of COVID. With COVID, telemedicine has become mainstream medical care overall, not just abortion, but many of the medical services are delivered now by telemedicine. So the telemedical abortion services, which can only be done with abortion pills, It's extremely safe. It's the same as a miscarriage, and actually it's safer than a miscarriage because people can plan it. You can plan to be near a first aid center when you take when a woman takes the pills. The side effects are bleeding and cramping, and sometimes women can have a little bit of nausea or diarrhea. The complications are extremely rare, but I will mention them. Sometimes the pills don't work. In 1% of the cases, they don't work. But then you can repeat the doses, and then you have another 99% chance that it will work. Sometimes the abortion is not complete, and what happens then is that women can experience too much bleeding. So one of the things that people can do in order to treat that or prevent it is take an extra doses of misoprostol, which is the second drug, because the second drug is causing the contractions of the womb, which will then empty the womb, and so then the bleeding will stop as well. And the other complication is an infection, which is even more rare, and it only happens when there is already a pre-existing infection. So what we say is that there's a few symptoms that women have to watch out for, which is bleeding, which is more than filling up two maximum pads per hour for more than 2 hours, or it's like opening a tap, or when people have a fever for more than 24 degrees. And in that case, they would need to look for medical care in order to check whether they need any follow-up care or not. The pills are safe to use until 12 weeks of pregnancy. It's supported by the World Health Organization, home use till 12 weeks of pregnancy. However, research also shows that it's effective and safe to use after that time, up till 16, 17 weeks. So what is important is that if people want to use it even later in pregnancy, that they are near a first aid facility, so that if there is a complication that they can be treated, because it's very similar to a miscarriage. They don't have to say that they had an abortion. They can just say that they had a miscarriage, and there's no way that any doctor or other healthcare provider will find out that they used the medication. Of course, there is concerns that people might be put under pressure to confess that they did the abortion themselves, and that they might be criminalized. And so sometimes the states are overstepping their boundaries. This happened in Texas when a woman was actually arrested after taking abortion drugs. But in the United States, women are not criminal when they induce their own abortions early in pregnancy. There is another organization called If, When, and How, who is will support women with legal assistance if they would face any legal problems.
And your reaction to this news that Instagram and Facebook are removing posts offering abortion pills, Dr. Gompertz?
Well, we have been censored off and on by Facebook and Instagram and Google and many of the other for more than 10 years. So this is one of the main problems. So abortion pills is a solution for a large part of the people living in the United States. But the problem is they will need to have to find the services that can be provided to them. And there, Google plays an important role, and the algorithms, they actually make it hard to find services like Paydexes or any other online services that are available on top of the censorship that's there. And this is really unfortunately, and it's really difficult to fight it because these companies, they're not transparent. Nobody knows where to complain when this is happening. And so there has to be a lot of public pressure put on them, I think, in the US to make sure that instead of censoring it, they will promote these kind of posts. One of the problems is that there will also be people now that are going to take advantage. So they might there might be people there that are saying that they're offering medication abortion, but they're not, and they're not providing it, and they're just collecting money. And that is why these bans are so harmful, because it's really making people vulnerable to abuse and misuse. And of course, it will really discriminate against women that are in the most vulnerable social economic circumstances, that, for example, don't speak English very well, that are illiterate, that don't know how to navigate the internet or how to find reliable information. And what we also see happening now already is that the fear is tremendous. When we started Aid Access, we always asked women if they would be willing to speak with the press about their experience and why they were looking for online care. And there were many people that were willing to speak with the press, and now we see nobody wants to speak with press anymore because everybody is scared.
Dr. Rebecca Gompertz, what motivated you to found Women on Waves?
So I'm a medical doctor, and I've always been very invested in women's health. And at the time, I also sailed with Greenpeace, which is an environmental organization. And when I was on the ship, this is how the conversation led to abortion services being illegal in some of the countries that I was visiting with the abortion with Greenpeace. And so this is how the idea came about. And that was the start of my work, which is more than 20 years now.
What exactly this movement is? I mean, it started with a boat.
Yes, it started with a boat.
But talk about what you did.
Basically, the idea was that if you have a ship that is registered in the Netherlands, then it's Dutch law that applies on board a ship in international waters of countries where abortion is illegal. So what we did is we took the boat to countries like Ireland, Portugal, Morocco, Mexico, Guatemala, and some others, where we went into the harbor with the ship. We take women on board in the harbor. Then we sail outside territorial waters, which is 12 miles, so it's about one and a half hour sail. There they could receive the abortion pills, and then we sail back, and they have the miscarriage at home. And so this was a way to call attention to the inequalities that exist in between the different countries, but also the consequences of illegal abortion. And this is how Women on Waves started.
You have dealt with countries around the world where abortion is illegal. It's much rarer where abortion is legal, as it was in the United States, for there to be this kind of regression back to, in certain parts of the country, make abortion access illegal. Are you concerned about women, though at this point it's insisted that women themselves won't go to jail? As you pointed out, in Texas, there was an example of a woman who went to the hospital for a miscarriage, talking to the doctors, talking about maybe having taken this pill, and she was directly arrested in South Texas. This become increasingly common. And then if you could talk about, it's unusual that you as a doctor could give not medical advice, but advice to people in this country, what it means to make abortion accessible and legal once again in the United States.
So, I want to add something to what is also something that is really concerning. What is happening when abortion is made illegal is that you also see that doctors are really reluctant to provide medical care to women that need it in pregnancy. For example, when they present with a miscarriage later in pregnancy or with an ectopic pregnancy, because they are afraid that they will be charged under the abortion laws. So there's only a few countries where abortion has become more restrictive. One of them is Poland. And Poland, abortion was legal until 1993. When it became illegal after that, what we saw is that the stigma and the fear was so big that you could hardly find any medical professions willing to speak in favor of legalizing again. And it's become worse after that. So to reverse this decision will take another generation of activists who work really hard. These Supreme Court judges are going to be there for 20, 30 years. So it will take another 20, 30 years before this might even be reversed again, this decision. The impact is immediate. The impact is immediate concerning the taboo, the shame, the fear, it's already visible that it immediately happened in the U.S., where all the clinics in the states that implemented the trigger laws, they shut down. And even if you look at the reaction of the government, everybody's talking about how to stay within the law. I think this is not the moment anymore to stay within the law. This is the moment to make sure that women have access to safe abortions, despite the law and despite the fact that because this is such an unjust law that is creating so much social inequality and that will affect really the most poor women in the country.
And finally, this point that you raise about what actually happens now, in the end, it is not so much that women won't be able to get abortion, although in many cases, and particularly for poorer women, it's increasingly difficult to travel from one place to another. And it's not clear that if someone helps someone travel, even getting on a bus, the bus driver could be, quote, yeah, aiding and abetting. The law is completely vague right now. But that women will get abortions as they did before 1973 when Roe v. Wade legalized it around the country. But it will be unsafe. The United States in 2022 goes back to back alley abortions.
Well, I need to say, a medical abortion to do by yourself is not unsafe. Let me just say that straight. But I know, and that's also something that we know from the emails that we received with Aid Access, that people will try to do other things to end the pregnancy if they don't find help. So we have had emails from people that have, put things in their vagina and trying to put things in their wombs in order to induce the abortion, or started jumping off stairs, or started using all kinds of herbs. And that is unsafe, and nobody should do that, because that is really dangerous. But we also know that if people cannot find help readily or easy, then they will resort to this method. And the people that are still forced to continue their unwanted pregnancies and end in unwanted birth, the other reality is that the United States had extremely bad maternal health care. The maternal mortality is 1 in 5,000, which is 4 times as high as in Europe. And so we will also see women that are going to die while they are forced to carry their pregnancy to term because of the really bad maternal care that's being given.
So, Dr. Gompertz, can you talk about what your plans are for the future?
So there's different strategies that we have to follow. One is that women get access to abortion pills now, but you also have to look at the long-term strategy. And what we're developing now is we're working on making mifepristone, so the abortion pill, available as a once-a-week contraceptive and morning-after pill, so that you're blurring the line between anticonception or contraception and what an abortion is. And this would be like really a method, a medicine that can be on demand, that women can use, you know, how they want, on their own terms, either as a contraceptive or as a morning after pill. And why we think it's important is because this way you can make it available as a contraceptive, which will be much less regulated and possibly even over the counter in the future. And it's very important because it doesn't have the same side effects as hormonal oral contraceptives that many women don't want to use anymore because of the side effects.
And why can you just use one of the two pills?
Because this one, the mifepriston is working to postpone or to block ovulation, and it has an impact on the endometrium itself. So this pill alone, if you use it every week, but in a lower doses, which is 50 milligrams, then it prevents pregnancy from happening. It also prevents pregnancy from happening when it's used around sex, so as a morning after pill.
And why hasn't this been done before?
It's because it's not patented anymore, so the pharmaceutical companies are not interested in doing this research, and also because it has been registered as an abortion pill, so the pharmaceutical companies, they are scared to invest in something that they think that might not be successful to register as a contraceptive. The medicine is also very effective against endometriosis and myoma, so it's a very potent, very important medicine for women's health, and so because the pharmaceutical companies are not interested, that's why we took it up, because it's like when we started telemedical abortion 20 years ago, when everybody said it won't succeed, it's not going to work. We really think this is going to be the future, to make this medicine available on all the different indications that exist.
The Dutch doctor Rebecca Gompert, speaking to us from Amsterdam, founder of the groups Aid Access, Women on Waves, and Women on Web. That does it for our show. Tune into our July 4th special Monday for more on the overturning of Roe and to hear James Earl Jones and Frederick Douglass read his speech, What to the Slave is Your 4th of July?